This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. July 1st marks the first day of the new budget year for most state and local governments, and almost all of them are struggling to make ends meet, with collections from taxes down, and in many places way down, jobs, pensions, police and fire departments, schools and social services, they're all on the chopping block. College students recently demonstrated against tuition hikes and spending cuts in California. Firefighters in Florida protested layoffs there. In this economy, is anything safe? We'll check in with a few places around the country. We want to hear from you. What's happening where you live? Is spending being cut? Are taxes up? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, the historical figure who played such a big part in the Kagan confirmation hearings this week, Thurgood Marshall. But first, we go to Columbia, South Carolina, to talk with Democratic State Representative Joe Neal. He represents Richland and Sumter counties in the South Carolina legislature and serves on the Ways and Means Committee there. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And among the things that happened as the budget was cut there in South Carolina is that AIDS prevention programs were just about zeroed out. What's going to be the effect of that?
It's going to be pretty devastating here in South Carolina. We lost not just the prevention programs, but we lost funding for the ADAP, the AIDS Drug Assistance Programs as well. That means a number of people, several thousand, who will not have access to AIDS medication. Those individuals face some pretty tough times ahead with rising viral loads and imminent sickness and possible death.
Yes, in fact, you were quoted in the newspapers there as saying people are going to die.
Absolutely. We're in a pretty tough situation. This state came to the AIDS fight late. We've only had a prevention program and a ADAP program here for about 4 years. Prior to that, we literally, as a state, did not spend any state dollars on AIDS prevention or treatment. And so the problem is particularly egregious here.
Those weren't the only programs, of course, that suffered cuts in South Carolina. People with diabetes, access to prescription drugs, and aid for rural hospitals and physicians, all of those are being cut as well.
That's correct. We're losing quite a bit in the way of health care access for our citizens. Across the board, including cancer screenings and colorectal screenings and the like, it's going to have a tremendous impact, I think, here in this state.
And, in fact, you've suggested that at least the AIDS funding is being cut for a purpose.
Well, it's a program that, as I said earlier, had not received a great deal of legislative support historically. And it's one that, frankly, is seen as a black disease in many quarters here, and as such does not enjoy widespread legislative support.
You were quoted as saying, I think the cut was designed to send a message that these people don't matter.
Exactly. And that's what I meant when I said they don't have widespread legislative support. It's unfortunate because there's so much stigma attached to HIV and AIDS in this country, but particularly in South Carolina.
Given the political climate, it would be unlikely that taxes were going to be increased by the legislature, or even if they did, that the governor would have approved it. Given that, what would you have cut instead?
You know, there were a number of items that I think could have been postponed in terms of funding. For example, we spent about $1 million plus on our conservation efforts here in the state. While conservation is important, I certainly would have preferred to save lives rather than preserve trees.
Conservation of forest lands is what you're talking about?
Correct.
And these programs are important, but, well, as you say, it depends on where your priorities are. Is there any recourse at this point?
It does not appear to be. Our session has ended, and we will not be in session again until January.
Until January. So these cuts go into effect today, and there's nothing you or anybody else can do about them for the next 6 months.
That's correct.
Well, Representative Neal, I sympathize with your situation. Thanks very much for sharing your time today.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Joe Neal, Democrat in the South Carolina legislature, joining us today on the line from Columbia, South Carolina. We're asking you what's happening where you live as new budget cuts and new taxes take effect on July the 1st, the start of the fiscal year for many state and local governments, most state and local governments. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Laura's on the line with us from Orlando.
Hi.
Hi, Laura. What's your situation?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm an attorney for a public criminal defense firm, and in interviewing for different positions, I've noticed that over the past couple months, most of the public attorney agencies that I've applied for have been offering hourly wage with no benefits because they're unable to provide benefits to new employees with the budget cuts that have happened in Florida. So at this point, you know, I'm not really sure when I'm going to be able to get health insurance, but for now I'm working, you know, an hourly wage as an attorney with a full caseload.
Essentially, you've got a full caseload, but you're being paid like a temp.
Basically, yes. And you know, it's my agency, it would be more than happy to provide health insurance for me. I know it's not their decision, but with the budget cuts that there have been, you know, and my student loans, it definitely makes a big strain to have this big education with, you know, no health insurance.
Laura, we wish you the best of luck. Stay healthy.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Nicholas Johnson, director of the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, where he co-authored a report on state money problems. And nice to have you with us today.
Oh, it's nice to be with you, Neil.
And what we heard from that attorney in Florida and from the state representative in South Carolina, just a couple of stories. Of course, these stories impact people's lives all over the country.
All over the country. 48 states have faced budget shortfalls over the last couple of years. And the problem, in a word, is revenues. State tax revenues are, because of unemployment, because of declining consumption, declining property values, are down 10-15%. The demand for service has not declined. In fact, it's gone up. And that's created these budget gaps that are very difficult to fill.
And we've heard a lot of people say, look, the economy is beginning to pick back up. As it turns out, we've always heard about leading indicators. Tax collections, I'm told, are a lagging indicator, one of the last things to turn around.
Yeah, state and local governments are definitely lag the national economy. The fiscal year that begins today in most state and local governments is actually probably going to be the worst of this whole downturn, even as the economy starts to pick up.
And the services that are being cut, it's fair to say that the people who have the highest demand for services are the poor.
Absolutely. And it's certainly the most vulnerable in the society that are being hurt the most by this downturn.
And as you look ahead, some of these situations you have, lack of money does not add to political lubrication, as you will. You've got the governor of New York today, I think, signing 6,900 veto orders as state legislators wanted to have items passed into his budget. And he says, no, 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 no. You've got the state legislature and the governor in New Jersey at loggerheads. Over profound differences about the philosophy of government.
Certainly tough times make for very tough budget battles in state legislatures. And when they reach resolution, things don't get any better necessarily for the population. The governor and the legislature in New Jersey did come to an agreement. Part of their agreement is to cut $45 million from an important tax credit for working poor families with children.
Well, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Aditya. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're calling us from Princeton in New Jersey. What's your situation?
I'm actually a rising sophomore at Case Western Reserve University up in Cleveland, Ohio. And it's a private university. And my tuition last year was about $50,000. And I didn't get that much financial aid. I got like a work study and some grant that the university gave me. But this year they took away quite a bit of my financial aid and they increased tuition by close to $4,000. So tuition this year I'm looking at like $54,000 with like almost $10,000 of my financial aid cut. My family, we're upper middle class, I'd say, but it's difficult to afford $53,000 a year for college tuition. And if you want a job in the future, you're not even looking at undergrad anymore. Most jobs require a post college degree as well, like an MBA or something else.
And you're not going to be able to pay off that loan by asking people, "Do you want fries with that?"
On a side note, I actually had to get it. I actually work two jobs now. I work one at Burger King, and I have an internship as well. So I'm working close to 56 hours a week, which is quite a bit.
And your caseload at school.
Yeah, no.
These are summer jobs.
Right now.
All right, all right. Well, good luck to you. I appreciate the phone call.
And I love your show, by the way. I listen to it on my way back from work.
Oh, well, thanks very much. Between your jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
Bye-bye. Let's see. We go next to, this is Pete. Pete with us from Charlotte.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, actually, like I said something before, is that I live in Charlotte, but in South Carolina, it's kind of interesting. They reduced the budget a lot. That it looked like it's really affecting public safety, and I think the sheriffs and regular the other public safety is kind of like relying more on security to provide a lot of the public safety ends, because I know security in South Carolina, they got arrest power, so pretty much on the property the same thing as the sheriff.
So they're relying on private security rather than the are police and fire cut budgets being cut, Nicholas Johnson?
You know, everything's on the table in the downturn. That's the problem. State and local governments spend 80% of their money on health care, education, public safety, and transportation, and certainly all of those areas have seen cuts.
Including police and fire departments?
Police and fire departments. And of course, you know, house fires don't stop happening just because there's an economic downturn. We still need to have those departments well staffed.
Yeah, but a lot of them are offering it more so for like private. I think private security is stepping in a lot to take up a lot of the gaps.
Well, they may not come to put out the fire in your house, though.
Oh no! I heard that in Arizona got private fire departments, so I guess that's different over there.
Well, volunteer fire departments too. So yeah, maybe private. I'm not sure. But Pete, thanks anyway. Thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
We're talking today about the budget cuts and new taxes that are in effect around the nation. Smokers in several states are going to be paying a lot more for their cigarettes starting today as new taxes take effect. There's going to be a soda tax in Washington, and, well, other taxes are going up too. You've probably heard about the tanning tax. Well, most places, though, are being affected by budget cuts. What's going on where you live? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Illinois is another state seeing big spending cuts today. Governor Pat Quinn announced the new budget this morning, slicing more than $8 billion from schools and other state services. A lot of money, but it does relatively little to erase the $13 billion deficit the state still faces. The governor proposed a hike in income taxes, but that got nowhere in Springfield. The state legislature adjourned without a final budget, leaving it to the governor to decide where and how to cut. Dozens of states are dealing with similar budget problems, to little revenue coming in and too much going out. What's happening where you are? Is spending being cut? Are taxes up? 800-989 is our phone. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest is Nicholas Johnson, who directs the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. California starts its new budget year today without a spending plan and with a $19 billion deficit. John Myers is the State House Bureau Chief for KQED, our member station in San Francisco, and joins us today from the studios of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Neil.
Has California ever submitted a budget on time?
We have, but it's so rare that I think when we submit one on time, it makes news. I mean, we've missed it 18 of the last 22 years that we've started a new fiscal year without a spending plan in place, and this one is no different. And as you said, a $19 billion problem in California. You know, for some perspective, over the last two or three years, lawmakers and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger have had to solve about $65 billion in budget red ink in California. So we have been hurting bad for a while before the economy got bad, and even worse since the economy worsened, and no easy choices out here.
Well, give us some examples of some of the hard choices.
Well, so far, I mean, when you look at the cuts that have already been enacted, I mean, you know, they kind of really show you a real depth of problem both on state government and local government. I mean, first of all, you've got schools that have lost a lot of money, thousands, tens of thousands of teachers that have been laid off. You've got county governments across the state of California hurting. One example that I read about recently down in Riverside County in Southern California, where they lost They had to cut so many social worker positions that they can't staff the child abuse hotlines the full time that they would like to. There's even an example in a newspaper investigation recently of the cuts in state parks funding to the point where there's one park in Northern California where the bones of settlers from the 1800s have been exposed by erosion. There's nobody to help fix that erosion. There's no money to clean it up. So, I mean, these are small examples, but really this is a huge problem for California, and there's a real political fight about taxes and cuts that we've been having for several years, and we're having again today.
And the governor vows not to raise taxes.
Governor Schwarzenegger is adamant that he's not going to raise taxes to solve this. There was a tax increase last year, a limited one to deal with part of the problem. But, you know, Democrats are the majority in the state legislature here in Sacramento, and they're adamant they're not going to cut some of the things the governor wants to cut. I mean, one of the examples that Arnold Schwarzenegger has proposed is completely eliminating the welfare-to-work program, which is called CalWORKs in California. California would be the only state in the country without a welfare assistance program. And there are a lot of folks who say, you just can't do that. That's going too far.
Is this being played out also in the political race, in the governor's race there?
Absolutely, absolutely. You've got a tight and very interesting race coming up this fall between the former governor, Jerry Brown, who's running again, and Meg Whitman, the former CEO of eBay, who both are going to have to talk about the budget. I think voters want to know about it. Whitman is a Republican and has talked about eliminating more jobs out of the state workforce and trying to do some supply-side economic stuff. Jerry Brown has said, I'll figure it out when we get there. I want to work with everyone. That's a little bit vague still, but you can bet that this is going to be a big issue because, again, we seem to have so many problems. I mean, it's really easy to find a problem after problem. And again, you know, a state that really represents one out of eight Americans live in California. And there's a lot of theory from economists that the more these cuts impact the services programs in California, the more it's going to be felt in the national economy. The old saying, as California goes, so goes the country.
When California catches a cold, the country catches pneumonia. John Myers, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it. And go out and raise some money for the state. Okay.
Thanks, Neil.
John Myers, State House Bureau Chief for KQED, our member station in San Francisco, with us from the studios of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Let's go next to Victor. Victor with us from Orlando.
How are you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you.
First time I call your program. This is, I like it very much.
Oh, thank you.
My concern is here in Florida, they cut so much money from the school systems and all their programs, social programs, you know, but they don't cut no money from the prison systems. The prison systems here keeps growing and growing, and they spend so much money in prisons and jails, but schools, they cut a lot of money from schools.
Nicholas Johnson, I don't know if you know the exact numbers in Florida, but...
So, I mean, prisons represent a great opportunity for states both to improve their policies and to save some money. I mean, I think there's pretty widespread agreement on both the left and the right in the political spectrum that we have too many people in prison who don't necessarily need to be there, and intelligent prison reform can save money. That said, the scale of this problem would be too big to deal with cuts in prison systems
even if
alone.
They close down the prison system altogether.
If you let every nonviolent offender out into some kind of super released in the community, you'd save a lot of money, but you would still have significant budget problems.
We have, though, I think in the past year or so, seen the first decline nationally in the numbers of people in prison, in part because fewer people are being put in there because of budget problems.
You are seeing states like, surprising states, Kansas, Texas, who are taking a long, hard look at this issue.
Victor, thanks very much for the phone call. Keep listening. Let's hear some email. Ryan in Minnesota, living in a state that's facing a huge budget deficit, I find it appalling that cigarettes and alcohol are not taxed more. A pack of cigarettes still costs $5. This coming from an occasional smoker and drinker. Call it a user fee instead of a tax to appease the no new taxes Republicans. And I think, Nicholas Johnson, what several states are increasing tobacco taxes this year.
Many states. There's a half a dozen states that today are increasing cigarette taxes. Alcohol taxes certainly have been on the table in a number of states. I think what this problem requires is a real balanced approach that looks not just at spending cuts, but also at the tax side of the ledger, and not just at the excise taxes, not just at the sort of tax the other guy kinds of taxes.
Or the sin taxes.
The sin taxes, but looking at broad-based taxes. And a number of states have done that. They've looked at corporate income taxes. Oklahoma is scaling back some tax credits. So there's a number of states where they're looking at every single item in the budget on both the revenue and the budget side of the ledger.
Paul in Boston emails, I've been trying to quit for years. New York City cigarettes are now about $11 per pack. I hope Boston follows suit. He writes, I wish they were $30 a pack. I'm not sure he has stock in.
The other problem with the sin taxes, of course, is those are remain taxes on the most vulnerable. Those are regressive taxes that are paid most heavily by low-income residents. And so that has to be taken into account at some point.
But if it deters them from smoking, which is part of the would help also with the expenditures on health care.
Cigarette smoking is hard to quit. So, you know, for those people who are still smoking, they're paying a lot of taxes, and that's not necessarily fair.
Let's go next to Jim. Jim with us from Pipestone in Minnesota.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a county commissioner, and we're an ag-based and we're not the most prosperous county in the world. I could take an hour talking about our issues, but I will be very focused. We have a county hospital, and we just, in the past week, closed a county nursing home. And there are many issues, among them being the fact that reimbursement rates, medical assistance, Medicaid, however you want to call it, does not keep up with the rising costs. It's a small facility, and you can imagine what has happened to my community, the anger. And we are not a broke hospital. We have resources, but we're planning for the future, and we're doing the things because we know this trouble is going to continue, and how do we pare down, be as strong as possible and not hurt people when at the same time we're hurting people? It is an unbelievably difficult position. The anger that has, this is great, an election year for me, and I've been told by many folks, goodbye, we don't need, you know, that kind of leadership. And I don't know what we're going to do in our country, even for leaders who are somewhat disingenuous and talk about making tough choices, but can't back it up. What do we do?
Where are those people going that were in that nursing home?
We have two privately based nursing homes within the county. Will every individual have a bed within those? No. The large majority of them will. Otherwise, there are neighboring, within a 50-mile radius, there are more than enough beds. Within a 25-mile radius, we have the vast majority of beds. There are people who come and go in nursing homes, so I suspect the vast majority will remain within Pipestone County, but there will be some who will not remain in Pipestone County.
Is it fair? Your critics, from what I'm hearing you say, might characterize you as being cold-hearted.
It is cold-hearted. I'm a caregiver also. I take care of elderly parents. And in a sense, I have possibly doomed one of my parents to having to travel a great distance and one of them will need a nursing home sooner than later. It is terribly cold-hearted. My heart says I have done the most brutal thing possible, and my head, the fact that I am responsible for the budgets and for the well-being of our books to make sure that we are solvent, says I had no choice. What a great, what great options those are.
Jim, I don't envy you your choices, but thank you very much for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Casey. Casey with us from San Leandro, California.
Hi. My point is as hard as all these cuts are, and that last story is sad, I feel like there'd be a lot less waste and people would be able to spend their money on things that they find necessary to spend their money on, such as if you're giving the government money to take care of your elderly grandmother or something like that, I feel like the state has got to be wasting money on bureaucracy of channeling that money to the right place, whereas if you just keep that money, there's a lot less waste there, and you can personally decide in each individual case what is the most important to you, and it makes people more ready for the case of if the government isn't there to provide for you, say, in the case of Hurricane Katrina, then you should have your own ability to provide for yourself and not be reliant on the state if they're not there for you.
I hear your philosophy, Casey, but clearly it's the government's responsibility to do things like build the levees that were supposed to keep those waters out. It's the government's responsibility to put out fires and collect the trash and police the streets. No, you have to spend money on some things.
Yes, I agree. There are certain things, but there are certain things that are definitely unnecessary. I know the firefighters is one of the issues I've heard brought up very regularly, but I know that about 70% of firefighters are actually volunteer firefighters, and we would have more of that if the government stopped providing that service, and maybe that's time to look at that sort of thing. We've been on a decline. The Soviet Union provided everything for all of their citizenry, and it didn't work out so well for them. And the citizenry that was reliant on that it was left standing with no help, and they've had all their money taken to provide for them, and then...
I'm not sure the analogy is quite exact between Sevastopol and San Leandro, but Casey, we hear your philosophy, and we thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. We're talking about the budget cuts and new tax increases that go into effect around the country today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Bill Cohen, the State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio, and he joined us from the State House News Bureau in Columbus, Ohio. Bill, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
And what's happening there in Ohio?
Well, see, we're really in the second year of a two-year budget, and it is now in balance. There's been some pain, though, a layoff of hundreds of state employees, closing of some mental hospitals. State workers are being told to take 10 furlough days off without pay. We had a 4% planned income tax cut that's been shelved for 2 years. A two-year freeze on tuition at state universities, that's been dropped, so tuition's now starting to rise again. But really, all the talk here right now is not on the current state budget, the one that we've got going for another year. It's on what's going to happen next July 1st, because that's when legislators need to come up with a new two-year state budget. They know the current one is kind of duct-taped together with all sorts of things, including about $8 billion in one-time money. And all the talk now is, okay, if all that $8 billion in one-time money, including about $4 billion in federal stimulus money, when that disappears, now we've got a $4 to $8 billion hole in the next two-year state budget. What are we going to do about it? And that's what everybody's talking about.
And what about revenue projections? Are they any better for the next year to come?
I don't think so. And I know that in the last couple years, state income tax and sales tax money has dropped way, way, way below expectations. And lawmakers and their budget experts have been saying, boy, that's like the first time that's happened in a long, long time, where those kind of revenue dips have happened more than just for 1 year, but over two, three, 4 years. So they're pretty worried.
And again, as we mentioned in California, there's an election for the governor and all the legislators are up to the same case there in Ohio.
Yes, so this question of what to do in the next two-year state budget is very much on the minds of the candidates. Ted Strickland is the governor. He says everything is on the table. He's running for re-election as a Democrat. He says everything's on the table, but he keeps saying, well, I don't want to raise taxes, but everything's on the table. John Kasich, former congressman, very conservative, has basically signed a no new taxes pledge. But then when we ask him, okay, fine, give us $4 to $8 billion worth of spending cuts you've got in mind, he says we'll cross that bridge later. So we're not getting many answers there.
I think people may try to avoid answering as long as possible. Bill
yeah.
Cohen.
Actually, to tell you how much they want to avoid this question, there are six legislators on a special committee, and they're supposed to tell the full legislature basically how to deal with this problem in a year. And I'll just tell you how eager these six lawmakers are to deal with this touchy issue. This panel was created a year ago. They just held their first meeting last Monday.
We're expecting the report any minute now. Bill Cohen, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bill Cohen, State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio, with us from the State House News Bureau there in Columbus. Nick Johnson, we just have a couple of minutes left, but I did want to point out there are some states where this is not a big issue. Is it fair to say those states are the sparsely populated and energy rich?
Yes, there's a couple of states, North Dakota, Montana, that are better off than other countries. North Dakota, in particular, has a big oil deposit. But this problem is really in every other state is very severe. And one of the important things to note here is that Congress actually has an opportunity to make things a little better, to reduce the job cuts, to reduce the private and public sector job loss that's happening as a result of all these budget cuts around the country. And it can do that by extending a key provision of the Recovery Act that's scheduled to expire in just 6 months. And they're just a couple votes shy in the U.S. Senate of doing that.
And still a very contentious issue, however.
Indeed.
And we should point out we were talking mostly about about budget cuts. State sales taxes are going up in a few states as well.
In a couple of states, in Kansas, New Mexico, some small sales tax increases, which will, and Arizona's gone up as well, which will help a bit.
But I think there are 10,000 families about to lose their access to welfare in Arizona, so that's a... Well, you have to look at that and make up your own mind about how you feel about it. Nicholas Johnson, thanks very much for your time today.
Oh, thank you.
Nicholas Johnson, director of the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, where he co-authored a report, New Fiscal Year Brings More Grief for State Budgets, Putting Economic Recovery at Risk. There's a link to that on our website. Go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the figure who played such an important part in the Kagan confirmation hearings, Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation, NPR News.